This show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Donald Trump launched an attack on Hillary Clinton Wednesday that included her State Department approving the transfer of uranium holdings to Russia.
Hillary Clinton's State Department approved the transfer of 20% of America's uranium holdings to Russia, while nine investors in the deal funneled $145 million to the Clinton Foundation. $145 million.
Clinton Cash author Peter Schweitzer said he was shocked that television networks like CNN and NBC are not interested in investigating the millions of dollars in donations to the Clinton Foundation on Thursday's Varney & Company on the Fox Business Network.
I did two chapters in the book on this Russia uranium deal. Donald Trump talked about it in his speech. The New York Times actually took our reporting and...
Well, nine investing
uranium company that needed Hillary Clinton's State Department to approve the sale of their company to the Russian government. And what the Clintons want to say is that there was just this spontaneous outpouring of benevolent donations by these shareholders and had no effect on her. My point is, look, you know, we would like to find out what kind of communication might have taken place here. She deleted 30,000 emails. But the point is, this needs to be investigated. And I'm really, frankly, shocked that a lot of news outlets, and I would name them, CNN and NBC, for example, are not interested in pursuing this story. This story came out, again, front page New York Times a year ago. It was in the book. Hillary Clinton has been on those networks numerous times, and she was not asked one single question about this transaction.
Right.
An amazing lack of curiosity.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I don't know. Are you curious about it? Does this matter? I mean, or in the fashion and form of her, what does it, at this point, what does it matter anyway? You know, this just seems to be, you know, passing up. It's, you know, conservative talk radio and conservative elements have brought this forth. You know, I got to tell you, the book, Clinton Cash, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, it's not, you know, it doesn't have everything, you know, tied down. Well, that wasn't the point. The point is that you got a lot of, you got a lot of smoke here, you know, Scott. It's not, you know, exactly, you know, where everything's tied down. Because that's the one thing about the Clintons. The Clintons know they live in the realm of plausible deniability, and they're taking everybody else with them along that way. And that's the challenge. And therein is the problem when you start to deceive yourself. You, it's not just you, but everybody else who believes in you. You know, their sense of truth and integrity is compromised. And this is the danger of selecting, you know, politicians that we just want to accept, oh, well, just politicians lie. And that's kind of the attitude. I mean, I've talked to people and they go, well, all politicians lie. No, all politicians do not lie. You know, and you know, I think there's, you know, plausible answers and reasons. In fact, you know, a little bit later on, we're going to be talking with Mark Hanna. Mark Hanna has written the book, The Best Worst President. He's a Democratic strategist, and he brings in some points here to kind of have us, you know, gain some balance in trying to understand. And that's been part of the challenge, I think, for quite a while through two administrations here of Barack Obama, is trying to understand Barack Obama. Is he is as bad as some of us on the right think that he is? Well, Mark has some counterpoints here that he brings out, and, you know, we'll listen to him. But all that being said, the challenge that we have today is to pursue the truth, because we're so hounded by, you know, so many forms and avenues of information. The challenge is to figure out, okay, which ones are giving us the truth or not. And this whole issue of Clinton Cash is like one of those deals where the flags are flying up there, and you go, whoa, you know, how come we can't get down to the answer? For the same reason we can't get down to the answer of Benghazi and some of these other issues, the Clinton emails. There's just lots of stuff there. But I don't think Hillary's going to admit to anything because she doesn't admit to anything. This is Bill Martinez. We've got more. Stay with us, America. You know, we've seen these crazy diets to lose weight, right? You know, some of us have tried many of them. Well, at Bill Martinez Live, our healthy body weight loss system simply saturates the body with nutrition, bringing down cravings. It's been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Sweating during a good workout at the gym is a release of all 90 essential nutrients, leading to a further deficiency, causing an even greater craving for carbs, sugars, and fats. Diet and exercise cannot curb appetite. Like saturation of mineral vitamins, amino acids, and essential fatty acids. Stop the weight gain cycle and lose weight the easy way with properly blended, specifically targeted nutrition. Find us at BillMartinezLive.com, Longevity, or call 855-305-8326. Fighting cravings is a losing fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, that's 855-305-8326. 855-305-8326.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop.
Well, hello, America. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. This is Bill Martinez. It's always good to have you along with us. For more information on the show, BillMartinezLive.com, and we encourage you to get involved in the conversation. You don't have to agree, okay? This isn't one of these politically correct zones. In fact, we like it when you're a bit contentious because we know that you haven't had a lot of practice lately in contending with things because everything is so politically correct. You don't want to offend anybody. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Bill at BillMartinezLive.com. With us right now, Heather McDonald. She is the Thomas W. Smith Fellow at the Manhattan Institute. She's an author of the new book, The War on Cops, How the New Attack on Law and Order Makes Everyone Less Safe. Heather McDonald, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Bill, I'm so honored to be with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'll tell you, the honor's ours. I mean, especially you're writing about one of my favorite group of people. If it's not the military, it's certainly the first responders. And I can't quite even put it in words how frustrated I am. Why we have the war on cops, the guys and gals who put their lives on the line for us every day, and they got crosshairs on them, and they go, what are you guys doing here?
Well, many officers tell me they've never worked in an environment like this in their lives. The mm-hmm. hatred that they get in the streets, which is only echoed and amplified by the media and unfortunately repeated in a somewhat watered-down version by the president, who spreads Black Lives Matter lies about the cops and the criminal justice system being racist. It's getting impossible to recruit cops today. And those that are in the profession, many of them are deciding to leave because it is just, it's almost an unworkable job.
Exactly. Well, you know, we've heard, in the current vernacular in workplace environments, hostile work environments. I mean, this doesn't define a hostile work environment. And it's not by them. It's by outsiders creating this hostile work environment. Isn't that so?
Right. You cannot talk to an officer today who works in an inner city neighborhood that won't tell you that when he gets out of his car to make an investigatory stop, to ask a few questions or make an arrest of somebody who's just been engaged in a shooting, he's almost often surrounded by a hostile, jeering crowd, sometimes throwing things, inevitably entering the crime scene, sticking their cell phones right in an officer's face. And this is having an extraordinary deterrent effect on officers engaging in precisely the type of discretionary, proactive policing that brought us a 20-year crime decline that ended after the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, when we had the explosion of this anti-cop animus and a political discourse that says that cops are racist for trying to prevent lives in the loss of lives in minority communities.
Well, there was no question the Michael Brown incident was an excuse. It definitely opened up a wound that has been festering for decades. We just have never quite cleaned that wound out. And here it is, a young man who sticks his head inside a cop car, and he's trying to wrestle the gun away from the officer. You know, what are you thinking? I mean, do you think this is going to lead to a demonstration of what our AG would call just, you know, a demonstration of love?
Well, anybody who tries to grab an officer's gun is putting that cop on notice that he intends to use it. And the vast majority of times that officers use their own weapon and kill somebody, it's because somebody was resisting arrest, sometimes violently, sometimes armed himself, and that never gets put out there. Mm-hmm. In fact, even the cases that are classified as unarmed victims of police force often replicate the Michael Brown incident, where somebody is trying to get the officer's gun or other parts of his equipment, beating him, you know, very severely. So officers react to how they're responded to, and if somebody is resisting arrest, they are going to escalate, an officer's going to escalate his own use of force.
Exactly. Well, we saw an incident here recently in Las Vegas where you had a kid who overstayed his visa, tried to take an officer's gun in order to shoot Donald Trump. Fortunately, I don't even think Donald Trump or anybody in that audience realized exactly what had happened. But the officers doing their job, you know, corralled the individual and walked him out. And he's going to have a little bit more of a longer stay here in the United States, huh?
But, you know, he'll probably be released back in the community if we know the pattern of the Obama administration.
Yeah, this is it is just absolutely ridiculous. But meanwhile, you know, the other thing to put into perspective here, Heather, and I know you addressed this in your book, is how many officers actually are engaged in an officer shooting incident? It is really a small percentage, you know, compared to what happens in the general market, in the general population. But this is really blown out of proportion. Because especially if somebody happens to have a video, you know, iPhone or some other digital, you know, phone or device that they've captured the event on, you know, we're just so much in a hurry to get all the facts together that we won't allow due process to run its course. But due process is so important.
Well, Bill, I've found out that there's actually a much larger proportion of white and Hispanic homicide victims who were killed by the police than black homicide victims. This is just the exact opposite of what you'd expect from the Black Lives Matter movement. It turns out that 12% of all white and Hispanic victims are killed by the police, compared to 4% of all black homicide victims who were killed by the police. There's 6,000 blacks who were murdered every year. That's more than the number of white and Hispanic homicide victims combined, even though blacks are 13% of the nation's population.
Exactly.
And they're being killed not by police officers, not by white civilians, but other blacks.
Exactly. Well, we see every weekend, I mean, I shudder at the end of every weekend to hear the toll out of Chicago alone, Heather.
It's just unbelievable. This last weekend, there was somebody shot every 43 minutes. There was a 3-year-old boy killed in a drive-by shooting. No protesters are gathering there to turn the 3-year-old boy into a national symbol, although they should, because he's typical. I mean, in September of 2015, 3 children under the age of 5 were killed in Cleveland. There was a 9-year-old girl in Ferguson, Missouri in August of 2015 who was shot while studying on her grandmother's bed. The drive-by bullet went through the house and killed her.
Right.
Kids are being gunned down by these insane drive-by shootings, and they get almost no attention from the press.
But you get an officer involved shooting, especially if it's a white officer on a black, a black person, and we have all hell breaking loose here.
Well, you know, we're risking something even, I don't know if it's greater, but obviously there's nothing more important than lives. Nevertheless, what's going on is a very serious delegitimation of the criminal justice system itself. This is bigger even than officers. You have an attack on incarceration as the result of racism. It is not. We have the fairest criminal justice system in the world, and the overrepresentation of blacks in prison, which is what's driving all of this, is due to their astronomically higher violent crime rates. Blacks
exactly.
commit homicide.
Heather, I got to cut you off. We got to go to break. We'll pick it up from right there when we come back after the break. This is Bill Martinez Live. We're talking with Heather McDonald. More from Heather right after this.
Higher during the day and lower during nighttime sleep. However, many with high blood pressure don't exhibit this nighttime dip, a condition called non-dipping. More in today's AARP Health Tip after this.
At Walgreens, getting diabetes testing supplies with Medicare Part B is a walk in the park. Really? Because getting what you need is quick and easy, giving you more time for other things. There's $0 out of pocket on all major brands like AccuCheck and Walgreens True Metrics, and no extra paperwork. So managing diabetes becomes a stroll down easy street, or a trip to the movies, or even a day at the beach. Talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, at the corner of happy and healthy.
Zero out of pocket costs when billed to Medicare and full coverage supplemental insurance.
Non-dipping is a major risk factor for stroke, heart attack, and kidney disease. But studies show taking one or more of your prescribed blood pressure medications just before bedtime significantly decreases the risk. Of course, never change the timing of your medications without first consulting your doctor. For more, go to aarp.org.
Here's Dr. Paul Meyer, Christian psychiatrist, author of 85 books, and founder of the national chain Meyer Clinics, to tell you about To Your Health liquid vitamins.
I've been taking these every day for over a decade now, and I try to encourage every one of my clients to take them every day. And there's a number of reasons. First of all, it's the best vitamin you can get. It's got dozens of vitamins, antioxidants, and nutrients in it. And then the most important reason why I do it as a psychiatrist and recommend it to my patients is because it's got brain food in it. It's got the essential amino acids. It's got tryptophan, phenylalanine, tyrosine, choline, vitamin B6, and these chemicals that are all natural from food turn into the brain chemicals that make you happy.
To Your Health is delicious. Find out more today. Call us 800-801-3459 or visit online at mytoyourhealth.com. Use the coupon code RADIO15 for a 15% discount on your order. That's mytoyourhealth.com.
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771. Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
This is Rick Osick, president of Famous Footwear. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. As a business leader, I know that babies born very sick or too soon cost businesses billions of dollars each year, in addition to the emotional stress on employees and their families. That's why Famous Footwear is committed to raising funds to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in the March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
You've reached Bill Martinez Live.
Welcome Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here. We're talking with the author of The War on Cops, How the New Attack on Law and Order Makes Everyone Less Safe. Heather McDonald is with us. Heather, I want you to pick up and have a chance to complete your thought. We had to go to break there and take care of some business, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to finish that thought.
Well, I was saying, Bill, that what's going on is a much larger delegitimation of law and order, and we are playing with fire. If this rhetoric, if this discourse continues, we are undermining our greatest civilizational achievement, which is due process of the law and respect for the law. And now you see that respect completely breaking down in inner city areas, but it's also, again, being echoed by the press and by the White House. And, you know, that puts the people who most need the protection of the law at risk, and those are those people who live in high crime areas. But if we expect the mayhem to stay put there, we're naive. It's already spreading in Chicago. You have on the Gold Coast, Magnificent Mile, there's been drive-by shootings and robberies. And so we are, you know, risking a record-breaking crime drop, and above all, risking the very ideals of this country.
Well, Heather, you're there in New York, and you know what happened in the transition. You were there when crime was running rampant, and then the mayor said, "Party's over. We're going to get tough on this situation and reclaim the streets and the parks for New Yorkers." And there was a tremendous shift that happened there in New York. And you would think that people would pick up from that example and say, you know, this is the formula. I mean, how come, you know, how did we forget that so soon?
Well, it did pick up. We had a policing revolution in 1994 here that was under Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, and then Police Commissioner William Bratton said policing is going to get data-driven and it is going to prevent crime, not just react after the fact. And we started holding police commanders accountable and asking officers to more assertively engage in proactive discretionary policing. That policing revolution spread nationwide and drove the 20-year 50% crime drop nationwide. In New York, we've had an 85% drop in Part 1 serious felonies. But everybody's gotten complacent now, and over the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a rise in the virulence of racial victimology. We've never been free of it, but it's gotten to really hysterical proportions, especially on American college campuses, but also among activist groups. And because people seem to have forgotten what crime was like in the early 1990s and also in the 60s and 70s,
exactly,
people are indulging themselves in their fantasies of black victimology and white guilt.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you bring that up. That's an excellent point. I think that that's partly what contributed to as what you defined as the Ferguson effect. Is that not right?
Yes. People are saying they're it's just a political game to demonize the cops. We talk about police racism. This has been an obsession of the last two decades in order not to talk about a much more difficult problem, which is black-on-black crime. Mm-hmm. Blacks commit homicide nationally at 8 times the rate of whites and Hispanics combined. And if you take Hispanics out from that comparison, you get about an 11 to 12 time differential between black and white homicide offenders. Mm-hmm. And in cities, the spreads are even greater. And the reason for that is the breakdown of the black family. Family mm-hmm. breakdown afflicts the whole country at this
exactly.
point, but it's particularly acute among blacks, and nobody really wants to confront those facts.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that comes into play here is you've got outside intervention coming in, outside players that have nothing to do with Ferguson. I mean, what they discovered was there were so many outside they came in for one reason. They came in to disrupt and to, you know, all in the name of Black Lives Matter. But what value did they bring to the discussion? They just brought all kinds of disruption and destruction to that local community, and the people who live there and work there, they're left with the remains, which isn't a whole lot right now.
Well, the mainstream media is completely an enabler of professional activists and protesters and anarchists. There's no question. The media loves riots. They love black violence. They've got a whole riot ideology going, and they film these riots with loving care, and they want to, they keep going that myth of endemic white racism. And so it's not surprising that we get more of that type of anarchy and violence, because it the media eats it up. And it's not just out of commercial interest. I mean, that's a little facile to say, well, it sells papers or whatnot. The media at this point is a long-standing product of the left-wing academy, and they believe this stuff. It's not just that they're trying to get more viewers. They actually believe the Black Lives Matter falsehoods.
Exactly. Well, the other thing that goes on, too, that I see, Heather, is the black people that are caught up in this narrative and that are influenced by this. I mean, they are convinced that they're deserving of reparations. And meanwhile, you have non-black America going, you know, how many more generations do we have to pay? We're paying reparations right now, and this thing is endless. And meanwhile, we're not, it doesn't seem like we're getting any closer to a kumbaya moment when we realize that we're all Americans. It's not about somebody being a Hispanic American, a Mexican American, or a black American. We're all Americans.
Well, again, you have a whole professional investment. Universities now have this massive diversity structure of bureaucrats that are dedicated to separating students. We really are ready to be post-racial. My experience of young people is that they actually do not give a damn about race, but as soon as they enter high school or now even elementary school, they've got the multicultural deans and provosts and diversity and inclusion vice chancellorettes that get their talents into them and convince the black students to think of themselves as victims, even though if they're at a selective school, they're likely there because the school is so determined to have them there that they've been admitted under a double admission standards.
Yes.
And they increase any kind of racial division. But, you know, the other people that are so disturbed by this narrative are the many, many black residents of high crime areas who love the police and say, I want more cops. You arrest drug dealers and they're back the next corner, the next day on the corner. Why can't you lock them away? I talked to a Mrs. Sweeper, a cancer amputee in the Mount Hope section of the Bronx, who said, please, Jesus, send more police. The only time she felt safe to go to her building lobby to pick up the mail was when the police were there, because otherwise that lobby was colonized by teens hanging out, smoking dope, and selling drugs.
See, Heather, and unless we live there and we can put ourselves in this woman's spot when she's doing all she can just to survive day to day and have to, you know, put up with that in her own neighborhood, and what does she have? How can she combat that? She has to rely on the police. And meanwhile, the police, for, you know, doing the right thing and wanting to protect and serve the community, you know, they've got targets all over themselves.
Well, you're absolutely right, Bill. The elites are clueless about the degree of disorder in inner city communities. New York City went through a trilogy of federal lawsuits against the New York Police Department, alleging that their stop, question, and frisk practice was racially biased. But assisting in those lawsuits were elite law firms like Covington and Burling, Paul Weiss, and the lawyers that were working pro bono on these cases were condemning the fact that the NYPD does trespass patrols in private buildings and in public housing projects. Well, these lawyers have doormen in their Manhattan $1 million condos.
Well, Heather, we got about 10 seconds to wrap this up. Thank you so much for all your hard work. The book is wonderful. It is provocative. It will open eyes up. How can they get their hand on the War on Cops?
Well, Bill, I think local bookstores should all have it. It's out now, and certainly you can get it on the web at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
And
this report is brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. New Jersey just got healthier. Hackensack University Health Network and Meridian Health have joined together to change how care is delivered. Robert C. Garrett, co-CEO.
We intend to make our coming together more meaningful and groundbreaking as we anticipate Hackensack Meridian Health will transform healthcare delivery and serve as a national example. Our leadership is committed to implementing innovative models of care, advancing education and research, and thoroughly reimagining healthcare delivery to thrive in this new world.
John K. Lloyd, co-CEO.
Our commitment includes our network of physician practices, home care, rehab facilities, fitness and wellness centers, post-acute care facilities, and much more. This is truly the most comprehensive integrated network in New Jersey and one of the top in the country.
For more information, visit HackensackMeridianHealth.org.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
From Maine to Oregon and SoCal to Florida, Bill Martinez live. Bill Martinez live.
Hey, just the way you like me, ladies and gentlemen. Fresh every day, 3 hours coming at you from 9 to noon Eastern on these 280-some affiliates of ours. Thank you for joining us. Dr. Kevin Gutzman, who is an attorney, he's a professor and chairman in the Department of History at Western Connecticut State University and faculty member at LibertyClassroom.com, author of 4 books, including his latest, Who Killed the Constitution? The Fate of American Liberty from World War I to George W. Bush. Dr. Gutzman, it's always good to have you with us on Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
Hello, Bill. Very well. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. All weekend long, people, top of mind was, a couple things, but particularly Brexit. What this could mean for the West and particularly the United States in this 2016 election. What did you make of this?
Well, I thought that, for one thing, the market response to it was completely overhyped by the media. You know, most of the major media were opposed to Brexit, didn't want any such thing to happen. And then in the couple days aftermath, you saw the Dow Jones tick down by 3.5%. And headlines said market dives, stock prices crash, 3.5%. That's not a very uncommon week in the American stock market. I thought it was completely misreported. Yeah. On the other hand, as for the motivation of people who were in favor of Brexit, I think what it shows is that while Westerners generally are in favor of trade, they don't like the more advanced idea of eliminating nations. they don't want there to be kind of one big homogenized world in which there's essentially no local community, no local identity, and that is what the European Union had come to stand for. So I say good for the British. I have a similar feeling about American commitments to international organizations, and so I can entirely sympathize with people who voted for Brexit.
Yeah, what's wrong with protecting your own and saying, hey, let's have our own country? Otherwise, if we're all homogenized, then why should we travel and go and experience other cultures and countries, right?
Well, there's that, and there's also the fact that, you know, I think it's a very normal human kind of sentiment that one favors one's own culture, one favors one's own customs, one favors one's own language, one's own religion. If it's decent, one favors one's own form of government. And so the idea that, well, we're going to transfer a lot of decision-making authority to unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats in Brussels, place, you know, that's even outside the United Kingdom, why would Englishmen in general favor that? And then when you look at the kind of things that the European Union arbitrarily forces on member countries, for example, elimination of the highly diverse different kinds of cheeses in France, or different kinds of beers in Germany, or, you know, they just come in with regulations that don't seem to have any actual necessity backing them up. And people could look at that and say, well, to be German means a particular thing. It's mm-hmm. what I want. And why should we have the European Union making us abandon our customs, our habits, our culture, what we've understood to be a good life, in order to homogenize Europe? Or
exactly.
And when it comes to America, of course, we're involved in the North American Free Trade Agreement. We're in the World Trade Organization. We're in the United Nations. And I think there's the same kind of impulse among intellectuals in the United States to have homogenization there, too.
Well, President Obama expended a lot of political capital by going across the pond, spent 20 minutes, you know, trying to teach the British what they needed to know about the EU, and basically sent a salvo over the bow of the boat of anybody that wanted to leave the EU, and saying that America may pull back and put England in the back of the line. It wouldn't be a favorable position. And the people, you know, pretty much resented POTUS going over there and trying to tell them and threaten them. And they said, fine, bring it on. Let's do it. But, of course, in reality, it's not going to play out that way, in much the same way as everybody was hyping these numbers with a Dow Jones. And this is a big issue that I have, Kevin, is with this information that's coming out, is that people need to be real careful and not knee-jerk response to the first, you know, bit of, you know, polling evidence or whatever that they may get. Is that you got to, you know, really look into the numbers and question where is that information coming from? Because what really came out big time was the exposure, you know, to your point, of people, what they aligned to. If they wanted to, you know, leave, then their worldview was accordingly. If they wanted to stay, it was accordingly. And, you know, the challenge is deciding and deciphering what that meant overall. And it's the same thing here in America.
Well, I think one interesting parallel between the situation in Britain and the situation here is that in the ruling Conservative Party, there was a significant split. So Prime Minister had run the last election on the ground, not elect the Conservative majority and we will stay in the European Union, but elect a Conservative majority and we'll have a referendum, which meant he was not going to try to hold members of his own party in the House of Commons to his position. And this is a very unusual kind of thing for a majority party in a parliamentary system to say, well, we're going to have this major vote, and you can take whatever position you want and still be in good standing in our party. And the reason I say this is has its echoes in the United States is, of course, there's a similar kind of tension currently in the Republican Party.
Exactly.
The easy winner in the primaries for president this time around was Donald Trump, and a lot of people in the leadership in the Republican Party in Congress don't like Donald Trump. So, you know, you hear people like Mitch McConnell saying, ask, are you supportive of Donald Trump? Well, you know, the voters voted for him, and I think we have to respect that. Not, yeah, sure, he's somebody I've long felt myself to be in consonance with, and he's the kind of leader America needs, and so on, right? You don't hear that. So Cameron had significant split within his party and decided, well, I'm going to stand personally for staying in the European Union, but other conservatives are free not to. We won't punish them in Parliament. We won't take away committee positions or chairmanships and so on. But now that his position has been defeated, he's resigned his leadership. So, yeah.
And I respect that. I respected that.
Well, you know, you do have to say that there's a significant distinction between the tradition that we've developed in America and the one they have in Britain. It's always been true in Britain that if you were at the head of a cabinet post, if you were in a cabinet post, for example, let alone prime minister, and if a major initiative failed under your leadership, you would resign that leadership position. In America now, you know, in the last 10, 15, 20 years, it seems that no matter what a debacle a cabinet member's stewardship may be, say, or let alone the president, you just don't expect them to say, well, okay, it's time for somebody else, you know. Mm-hmm. Donald Rumsfeld waited years for Bush to fire it, for example. There's an egregious case. Or Eric Holder didn't leave when it was obvious that he was a complete failure as attorney general. And it's too bad, actually. It's too bad these people don't, on their own initiative, depart. It's hard for a president to fire such a person. Much better if they would say, I'm going to fall on my sword because, well, I deserve to.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing, you know, at least have enough conviction of what you believe in that when it comes up, it comes up against you that, as you say, good point, that you fall on your sword like Cameron. I'll tell you, I have a lot more respect for him because could you imagine? I mean, his heart was not in leading the country through this process. It was in staying, and he realized that he's not the guy for the job.
Right. Well, what we have here, of course, is a different situation, a novel one in which our chief executive says, you know, I'm sworn to uphold the law, but I don't like the law, so I'm just not going to enforce it.
Yeah.
That, I think, is, you know, that's an alternative Cameron could have followed. Well, I'm going to be prime minister, and I'm actually not going to do anything about implementing this. So he didn't think it was ethical for him to implement it after he told people it was a bad idea. And he thought that people should have their way, and so he would gracefully bow out. I think that this is the kind of behavior we ought to see from top officials in the American executive.
Exactly. It is a teaching opportunity, as they say. Dr. Kevin Gutschman, professor and chairman of the Department of History at Western Connecticut State University, has been our guest. Kevin, thank you so much for being with us. It's 19 before the top of the hour right now.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Blood pressure tends to run higher during the day and lower during nighttime sleep. However, many with high blood pressure don't exhibit this nighttime dip, a condition called non-dipping. More in today's AARP Health Tip after this.
At Walgreens, getting diabetes testing supplies with Medicare Part B is a walk in the park. Really, because getting what you need is quick and easy, giving you more time for other things. There's $0 out of pocket on all major brands like AccuCheck and Walgreens TrueMetrics, and no extra paperwork. So managing diabetes becomes a stroll down easy street, or a trip to the movies, or even a day at the beach. Talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, at the corner of happy and healthy.
Zero out of pocket costs when billed to Medicare and full coverage supplemental insurance.
Non-dipping is a major risk factor for stroke, heart attack, and kidney disease. But studies show taking one or more of your prescribed blood pressure medications just before bedtime significantly decreases the risk. Of course, never change the timing of your medications without first consulting your doctor. For more, go to AARP.org.
This is an alert. If your business or church is building this year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. A General Steel building can save you as much as half the cost and time of similar conventional construction. And we're offering rebates of up to $20,000 to help you build today. Call General Steel for free information that could save you thousands. Call 866-91-STEEL.
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 a doctor, I see patients every day who are losing their vision to age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. If you have blurry vision or blind spots, they can be symptoms of AMD, and if untreated, could lead to blindness. The good news? AMD can be managed with effective, clinically approved treatments that may reverse some vision loss. For free AMD information, contact the Foundation Fighting Blindness at 1-800-BLINDNESS. That's 1-800-BLINDNESS. There is a cure in sight.
This is a healthcare alert from the Pain Relief Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You don't have to suffer any longer. You can immediately qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you by calling our 24/7 Pain Relief Hotline at 866-389-0620. Delivery is free and all paperwork is handled for you. If you are on Medicare and have knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain, don't wait. You can qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost by calling our 24/7 pain hotline now at 866-389-0620. Our representatives are standing by 24/7 to take your call and rush you your pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you. Shipping is free and all paperwork is handled for you. Just call 866-389-0620. That's 866-389-0620. Again, 866-389-0620.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At Bill Martinez Live, we have a healthy body blood sugar pack focusing on structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at BillMartinezLive.com, longevity, or call 855-305-8326. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 855-305-8326. That's 855-305-8326.
You've reached Bill Martinez Live.
Hey, we're back with you, America. 14 minutes before the top of the hour. A little bit of a program change. My ear, I don't know why I was thinking. I was just so excited to be talking with Mark Canna. I was thinking he was going to be on today. He's actually going to be on Wednesday in the second hour of the show. And Mark, as I mentioned, is a Democratic strategist, and his new book is The Best Worst President, What the Right Gets Wrong About Barack Obama. He offers some balanced perspective. I say balanced only because it seems to be easy, especially when you get to the end of any kind of presidency. All kinds of shots, you might argue, or unfair shots can be taken at the president. Look what happened with George W. He's still maligned, but yet his approval ratings has continued to grow on the other side of his presidency and his administration. Because I think that, you get out of the fog and you're able to look at things a little bit more realistically. And maybe along the way in this debate, I think debate is healthy. It helps you kind of clear out these differences. But after it's all said and done, you got to look at it and say, okay, where he was at, was this the right move? Where was he right? Where was he wrong? And there's something for us as the constituency, as the electorate, to learn from this. That's the opportunity. But we're just stuck in our emotions, and not a lot's learned. We just stay emotional. But hopefully there's some sobriety that occurs where we're able to look with some objectivity and say, okay, here's what's going on. I mean, this is the importance, I believe, of, where the media plays such a critical role in documenting history. You've heard me say this. I think this is one of the big problems I have with the mainstream media today is that they have failed to do that. That is and that's the huge issue. Oh, David is, no, you mean Mark. I'm sorry. Mark Hanna's called in right now. Okay, well then, let's bring Mark. Okay, all right. Well, now we're really tearing this thing upside down here because we have a little bit of confusion. Don't we love live shows? Okay, well let's bring David Hanna. Maybe that was the confusion is trying to understand the difference between David Hanna and Mark Hanna. So let's bring David Hanna on, and then he can help us out here. David Hanna, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. Good to have you with us. Forgive me for being a little bit confused, because I got you confused with Mark Hanna. So can we kind of understand why that happened?
I'm not really sure. Good morning.
I apologize to you, and of course, as you can see me, I'm a little bit red on this, because I am trying to find even my notes for you as well. So help me out, David. Tell me why we should be talking, and then I can pick it up from here, okay?
Well, I have a book that's just come out called Rendezvous with Death. Mm-hmm. It's by Regnery History, and it's about a small group of Americans that volunteered to fight with the French Foreign Legion in 1914 when Germany had invaded France. And it's a really interesting group, because they were a cross-section of American society at that time, and they were very idealistic and out in front of the rest of the country, which was neutral, as many of your listeners probably know, until 1917. Mm-hmm. They were joining in 1914.
Well, and so during that period of time, I mean, with these, with them coming out, dig down a little bit deeper and give us some more of the background, if you would. I want to be able. We've got time, so we can unfold this a little bit more, David.
Fantastic. Well, it was an interesting group. For instance, there were some of them who had gone to Paris. They were artistically inclined, and they saw Paris as a place where they could pursue their careers as writers and artists and whatnot. And so they felt that Paris in particular was almost like a second home, and they wanted to help defend it. And a lot of their French colleagues had gone off to fight, and so they felt almost an obligation. So there was that. But then there were also other Americans who were in the States when news came. Two brothers, for instance, they were Carolinians, the Rockwell brothers, who were descended from a Confederate veteran of the Civil War, Enoch Shaw Ayers. The Rockwells felt that it was basically something that was a debt that America owed from the Revolution, you know, Lafayette and so forth, and that they needed to get themselves to France. And there were others who felt likewise. Frank Musgrave was a lawyer from San Antonio, Texas, Tulane graduate. He did the same, and others. So it was a combination. You've got people who were there in Paris who felt the immediate threat and that they should help. And then there were others who were more idealistically motivated to get themselves there and basically, you know, fight as they saw it to defend democracy and freedom from basically what Germany or the Kaiser Wilhelm's Germany represented at that time, which was, as they saw it, sort of might makes right. And that they needed to stand up. And the fact that the United States and its president at the time, Woodrow Wilson, didn't want to get involved, they felt that perhaps maybe their example might, over time, have some influence. And I think those who read the book, I think I make a case that, to some degree, that eventually was the case. Mm-hmm. And also the politics at the time there was a lot of division over intervention, and Theodore Roosevelt, the former president, was strongly arguing for intervention, and Wilson was reluctant, and so you had that division, and the volunteers were very aware of that, and so they were hoping that the American public would eventually come to see it the way they saw it.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, in your book, Rendezvous with Death, this is a powerful book. I mean, you're sharing the personal, riveting, inspiring stories of these seven unique Americans, as you said earlier, who joined the war efforts 3 years before, you know, their own country. So they saw the trajectory. They saw what was going on, and they just could not help themselves. Share with us some of the stories of these incredibly inspiring men.
Well, one of them was the poet Alan Seeger. He had gone to Paris in 1912, and then he joined up in 1914, and he eventually was involved in some of the heaviest fighting in the war. There was an offensive in the Champagne region in which he took part, which I was in France last year and visited the monument there. It's on a hill called Navarin Farm, and it's really quite moving. Seeger lost some comrades there, and many French and German soldiers, of course, died. And he eventually wrote about this. Because he was a poet, he was able to reach a lot of people. That was important, trying to make people understand why they were there and what they were doing. He eventually was killed in an action that was connected to the Somme offensive, which many of your listeners are probably aware of. In 1916, there was an attack on a village called Belleau-en-Santé, and he took part in that attack and was cut down and died. It was on the 4th of July, 1916. He had hoped to get a leave for the 4th to go back to Paris to read a poem that he'd written in memory of his fallen comrades to the American expat community there. But for various reasons, that wasn't going to happen, and he took part eventually lost his life. Another interesting story is that of Bob Scanlon. Bob Scanlon was an African American boxer.
Boxer, yeah, exactly.
And he'd gone over to Europe, looking for opportunities. He'd fought in London and Paris. Eventually came back, fought in New York and Milwaukee, and then eventually found himself back in Paris. And he felt that in Paris he had, options that weren't available to a black man living in the South at that time. And he felt that, it was his fight. And he was one of these figures that, when reading the various memoirs and letters and so forth that were left behind by many of these volunteers, Scanlon comes across as sort of this larger-than-life, good-natured character. He was in some of the heaviest fighting. He tried to resume his boxing career afterwards, but most of these guys physically were pretty well spent after their service, the ones that survived.
Imagine putting everything on the line that they did? I mean, they really surrendered their lives, their dreams, for the sake of the cause, didn't they?
Yeah, it's remarkable, too, because some of them were also very very wealthy, from very wealthy backgrounds. There was a lot of, blue bloods, some Ivy Leaguers, particularly Harvard. They had, the world was their oyster. They didn't have to, there was no obligation. The U.S. hadn't come in yet. And they still, wanted to stick it out. I really admire that grit. There was one figure, another interesting guy. He was a writer that just didn't really write much. He was interested in the social life in Paris. His name was David King, and he was one of these wealthy Harvard educated young men who was living in Paris at the time. And he at one point was buried alive after a shell exploded. And his comrades were able to dig him out. But the concussion permanently damaged his right eye. And instead of, basically taking what would have been an honorable convalescence at that point, he didn't want to leave his outfit. And he learned how to, without really talking to anybody about it, he learned how to fire his rifle from his left eye.
Wow.
This is a guy that did not have to be there.
Exactly. Well, David, I'm sorry, we're out of time. David Hanna on Bill Martinez Live.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
There is an affordable alternative to the high cost of healthcare that offers freedom from insurance while providing compliance with the Obamacare mandate. Imagine having access to quality, affordable healthcare that allows you the freedom to choose your doctor and hospital. Members can share up to 100% of necessary medical expenses, including alternative treatments. Find out how you and your family can contain healthcare costs without giving up your freedom. Go to LibertyOnCall.org. That's LibertyOnCall.org.